Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time Florence Nightingale for a post-surgery cataract patient.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that would gladly take the next rocket ship to Mars, just as long as we could do it remotely, sitting, say, before an IMAX-sized movie screen with a tub of popcorn nestled in our collective lap. Or even from the comfort of our respective living rooms, also with popcorn. The former setting is how the three of us experienced Project Hail Mary, the latest example of sci-fi movie-making imagination, that of a guy pulled out of the classroom and propelled into interstellar space in an effort to save Earth from destruction. We'll discuss our reactions to the film and then, as a bonus, list some of our favorite space travel movie adventures, none of which will be 2001, A Space Odyssey. Let's start this week's show by looking at the latest film adaptation of an Andy Weir novel. Weir, of course, is the novelist whose work is responsible both for Ridley Scott's 2015 blockbuster The Martian and now Project Hail Mary. This latest film, which stars Ryan Gosling and was produced and directed by the movie-making team of Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, is an exercise that pushes the limits of suspension of disbelief. But Lord and Miller, whose previous directorial efforts include 2014's The Lego Movie, make most of what we see feel believable. Gosling plays Ryland Grace, a one-time molecular biologist, now middle school science teacher, as a guy recruited to help solve a problem. Something is draining power from the sun. Lord and Miller tell their story in a non-chronological manner, switching back and forth from the past, when Grace is reluctant to be involved, to the present, when he wakes up on a spaceship and, suffering from amnesia, struggles to figure out what's going on. Owing a debt to several previous space films, from Silent Running to, yes, 2001, A Space Odyssey, Project Hail Mary will no doubt earn Oscar nominations for its special effects. And Gosling, with his talent for melding a full range of emotions, carries things well, even if he has to play much of the film against a CGI-created alien creature. And no, I'm not referring to the German actress Sandra Hüller, who plays a no-nonsense director of operations. If I do have a complaint, I think Lord Miller could have trimmed the film's 2-hour and 36-minute running time by at least 20 minutes, or even more. But I'm interested to see what both of you think.
I'm totally with you on that last observation about Project Hail Mary. It is way too long. It feels like it has multiple third acts. Just when I thought the plot was wrapping up, I checked my watch and realized, oh, there's still like 40 or 45 minutes left of this thing. But I did mostly enjoy it. I mean, it's just a really solid piece of big studio entertainment. And like The Martian, which I also think is a better movie than this, it's actually about characters solving their problems with ideas and scientific methods. It doesn't just resort to mindless action most of the time, although there is some mindless action in there, to be clear. And it's also, for most of its runtime, kind of a buddy comedy in space. Yep. And it's obviously indebted to 80s Spielberg movies that he either directed or produced or inspired. I liked the design of Rocky, the alien creature, because it doesn't have recognizable features. It basically looks like a pile of rocks at first, but then it kind of moves around like an insect or a spider, and we almost start to see eyes and a mouth, recognizable features within the patterns of the rock face. Actually, I don't know if it's totally CGI. I think there are physical puppets being used for Rocky. At least it had that tactile feeling that you don't always get from CGI. But
in some
I'm not
cases,
sure.
I believe you're right.
But oddly enough, with Project Hail Mary, even though I think most people are going to this for the space adventure parts, I thought the flashbacks to Earth before the launch were the most interesting and complicated scenes in the movie, because I liked Gosling's interactions with the Sandra Hüller character, because she is so cold and analytical and kind of robotic. But there are moments when her veneer starts to crack, or so we think, because there are secrets to this character that we come to learn. And there is a big reveal about the nature of Grace's role in this particular mission, which throws everything into question. But I actually think it comes a little too late in the movie. I kind of thought it should have been more of a midway reveal than a third act reveal. And another thing I'll agree with you about before I throw it to you, MP, is that I think Ryan Gosling is exactly the right actor for this part. He just has that kind of easy self-deprecation despite being a huge, handsome movie star. Kind of an inherent comedy. I mean, you think about, for instance, his role in Barbie as Ken, and he's so funny in that, in a role that's much more complicated than it appears, because for long periods of this, he's all by himself. And, you know, there is precedent for movies about astronauts being alone in space. We've seen it before. But I thought he did bring a lot of comedy to the role. And I actually started to care for the friendship between him and this pile of rocks. So obviously some big problems with Project Hail Mary for me. But mostly I enjoyed it. I do wish they had tightened it up because, geez, it does kind of feel like we're off on a really long space mission ourselves after a while.
I find the running time a little ironic because Ryan Gosling has sort of promoted this film, and he is an executive producer, as being something that he wanted specifically to be a family-friendly project.
There were a lot of kids at the screening I went to.
So if you think of some of his past films, shout out specifically to Blue Valentine, where you would never want to take your kids. I think that he was definitely onto something. As a matter of fact, I had read that at different points where he's talking to Rocky, the extraterrestrial rock creature, that he actually had an earwig that pumped his daughter's voices into his ear. And that conjured up some extra emotion for him during these like critical scenes.
Cute.
But you should not have a kid's movie that's over 2 hours. I mean, that's going to be multiple bathroom visits and like
to be
popcorn.
Fair, kids have been primed. They've been going to 3-hour Marvel movies for
years.
I'll take it back. Breezy ride.
It's only for old people who have to go to the bathroom in the middle.
There were a lot of adults who got up.
Yeah, came and went. There was no beer or anything, so I couldn't attribute. I didn't know what was going on. I think that seeing it in the IMAX or Dolby is really important. Obviously, you can wait for it to come into the comfort of your own home, as Dan explained in his overview to the broadcast. But I would definitely go see this one in the theater.
Oh, absolutely. We saw it in Dolby, right?
Yeah. And I agree with you, Nathan, that Ryan Gosling really is an ideal person because he has the physicality, because at different points, you know, he's supposed to be, regaining his footing after being in a coma and as a former dancer and everything. I mean, he sort of makes that physicality work. And also, I mean, he is this good-looking leading man, but he's not like beautiful, beautiful. So you could believe him as this sort of rumpled science teacher or whatever.
Hey, rumpled science teachers can look like movie stars too, I have no doubt.
Okay.
And in that sense, he has the same kind of screen presence that Matt Damon has. Matt Damon also a good-looking guy, but not perfectly beautiful.
And Matt Damon in The Martian is also on screen for long periods of that film by himself.
Exactly.
And he's trying to forge a relationship with us and the audience without anyone else to act off of.
I also like what Lord and Miller are able to do. I mean, you know, they're known mostly for the Lego movie.
And 21 Jump Street.
Rocky was kind of like a Lego creature.
I have no doubt there will be Rocky dolls
Cloudy
on the
with
market.
Meatballs
Cloudy
movies.
With a Chance of Meatballs. Yeah,
right, exactly. So animation and stop action. But this is really their first huge live action film. And I thought they acquitted themselves really well. It helps that they have Ryan Gosling at the center. The special effects of this movie were pretty daunting, I thought.
And don't forget that they were originally supposed to direct that Han Solo movie and got fired from it like halfway through. And Ron Howard came in. So this is almost them getting back at those people. I do think that Lord and Miller are so jokey. Like every line of dialogue in this movie sometimes feels like it's going for a laugh, that I do think that they dilute I laughed a lot of the time, not all the time, but I think that it kind of dilutes the tension that they're going for. And that's why the third act, I think, feels particularly lugubrious, is because you don't actually feel like Ryan Gosling is truly in peril.
Right, exactly.
So there's no tension there.
Okay, what's going to happen?
The movie does follow the book.
Sure.
I mean,
the ending
much
is different.
No, not particularly.
The ending, because I didn't like the ending of this particular movie.
I didn't read the book, but I went with some friends that had, and they sort of cleared up some of the questions I had about how did he get from there to there and why was he doing this? I guess in the book it's
well, you have to suspend
explained.
Your disbelief
we
because
certainly
the
do.
Fact that they are able to communicate at all is, you know, it's sort of back to Arrival where the
in
linguist, the Amy.
In the book, there's much more of a process that they go through to try to learn to speak to each other, to communicate with each other.
But you can't show all
that.
That
would have been forever and ever.
Absolutely.
And finally, I want to give a shout out to Sandra Hewler. And we recognize her from Zone of Interest and Anatomy of a Fall, two Academy Award nominated movies in the recent past. And she's a great German actor. I would like to have actually seen more of her.
Yeah, I agree. And her karaoke scene is great.
I kept telling Mary Pat, if I disagree with you, please don't throw me out the window. At any rate, that was our discussion of Project Hail Mary. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to offer up some of our recommendations for our favorite space travel movies that aren't 2001: A Space Odyssey. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Thanks to you, our spring membership campaign was more than a fundraiser. It was a powerful act of community support. Because you gave, we're able to keep showing up every day with the local news and information that you rely on, reporting on the issues that shape our region and helping you stay informed. Your generosity is what makes this work possible. So thank you very much for giving, for listening, and for standing with Spokane Public Radio.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Project Hail Mary, the Phil Lord and Christopher Miller directed film that stars Ryan Gosling. Let's now turn to other space travel films, namely the ones that each of us likes that aren't Stanley Kubrick's 1968 masterpiece, 2001: A Space Odyssey. Let me begin by stating that I insisted we delete Kubrick's film from our selections because we've mentioned it numerous times on the show over the years, and for good reason, since among other honors, it is listed at number 15 on the American Film Institute's 100 Greatest American Films of All Time. The three of us even once did a live taping of Movies 101 at the Bing devoted solely to a screening of it. So, enough already. Let's try to come up with something a bit more obscure, but still worth checking out.
I didn't really fully appreciate whether we were supposed to be talking about sci-fi movies, if we were supposed to be talking about space movies. So I just decided to do whatever I felt like doing in the broader genre.
What a surprise.
I know. Everybody would be shocked by that, including my Aquafit teacher and everyone else, because I kind of do my own thing sometimes.
I can't believe you're taking liberties with a prompt. That's never happened before.
Oh, I know. I came up with two completely different approaches, both films from about the same time period. So the first one is The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Yeah.
Usually referred to as Buckaroo Banzai. This has an amazing cast, first of all. So it has John Lithgow, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd, Ellen Barkin. But most important, it has Peter Weller as Dr. Buckaroo Banzai. And what could be better than this guy who is a physicist, a neurosurgeon, a rock star, a test pilot, and gorgeous. So, you know, he's every man and woman's dream, I would assume, in terms of this persona that he adopts here. And this was a film, the plot is a little bit difficult to explain, but he drives a car through a mountain and ends up in a different dimension. So I'll just start off there. And then they pull out this Dr. Lizardo, who's been confined in an institution for, quote, the criminally insane. And he becomes a part of the story. Of course, we have a love interest in Ellen Barkin, but it was just, it was zany. I thought the ensemble cast was great. I thought Peter Weller, who, interestingly enough, didn't necessarily have the longevity of career that many might have imagined, but I did discover he actually got a PhD later in life in Italian Renaissance art history.
Yeah,
so,
Dr. Peter Weller.
He truly was, I guess, the Renaissance man, much like Buckaroo Banzai. But I like this film. It was a 1984 film, and it was directed by W.D. Richter. And so I thought it was fun. And I don't know if it holds up. You know, I'll defer to others to see what they think.
I think that's a good pick. That's a super fun movie. And the Hong Kong Cavaliers is, of course.
Oh, of course.
His band, Buckaroo Banzai's band. I also kind of went in a campy-ish direction with my first pick, favorite space travel movies. 1990s Total Recall, directed by Paul Verhoeven, which takes a Philip K. Dick story, We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, and then turns it into a satirical and violent spectacle, which that's what Paul Verhoeven did.
With Sharon Stone.
With Sharon Stone and, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger as the star. And in this one, Mars has been colonized, but in lieu of actually having to go there, you can go to these places where they basically stick your head in a machine and you have false memories of having visited Mars implanted in your brain. And Schwarzenegger does this and in the process learns that he may have been a Martian secret agent and bad guys chase him to actual Mars. And maybe it's real and maybe it's all a fantasy, but it's got all these wild creatures. It's got these rubbery special effects. But as in Starship Troopers and RoboCop, starring Peter Weller, Verhoeven is kind of taking these ideas that we saw in, you know, retrofuturism, 50s sci-fi, but he's puncturing the optimism of those ideas with all this tacky consumerism, these fascistic power structures. Because when we finally get to Mars in Total Recall, it's not the utopia that's been promised. It's full of crime and poverty, and it's run by these politicians and businessmen who have made breathable air into a commodity.
Isn't the bad guy Michael Ironside?
Michael Ironside and Ronnie Cox as also from RoboCop.
Ronnie Cox, RoboCop.
That's right.
It's fascinating to me because we've had these space movies going all the way back to 1902.
Yeah, the birth of film. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When you think of things such as The Day the Earth Stood Still or Forbidden Planet. So it's something that people have been thinking about and wanting to approach in various ways, you know, for 100 plus years.
But I love that Paul Verhoeven takes all of that and goes, it would probably suck and and rich people would ruin it. I just love that about him.
We need to do a retrospective of Verhoeven himself.
I would love that.
What a career that guy had.
Yeah, and all over the place,
yes,
too.
Yes, exactly. Well, I came up with a whole list of movies, including Silent Running, the 1972 film by Douglas Trumbull, which was his first directorial effort after winning the Academy Award for doing the stuff on 2001, A Space Odyssey. But also, I put it under categories to think about. Silent Running, which was an environmentally oriented movie. Another movie to enjoy and maybe think about was WALL-E, the 2008 Pixar Disney movie. But the one that I absolutely wanted to talk about is what we used to call forgotten treasures or buried treasures or
unseen gems.
Yes, exactly. And it's called Ikari XB1. It's a 1963 film from the former Czechoslovakia. It was directed by Jindřich Polák, and it was adapted from a Stanislav Lem novel, who's the guy who wrote
Solaris.
The novel that was Solaris that Andrei Tarkovsky and Steven Soderbergh made into
the earlier
movies.
1972 version of that.
Yes,
I'll defend the Soderbergh version, but that's for a different day.
Yeah, what's interesting is that this was one of the films that Kubrick previewed before he made 2001, and it is such a bizarre film. It is not for everybody, but for those of us who love mid-20th century European film, black and white, with very bizarre sequences. I mean, there's 40-odd people on this spaceship that is going to Alpha Centauri to try to investigate a different world there. And
so, Dan, tell us where we can find that.
Well, it's on the Criterion Channel, so it's a subscription service. But it's a subscription service for movie fans. It is definitely worth checking out.
Can you say the title again of this movie?
It's called Ikari, which is Czech for Icarus. Ikari, I-K-A-R-I-E, XB1.
That's a great choice. I haven't seen that one, so I'm adding
either.
That to my
How'd
queue.
You sneak that in there?
All you have to do is just look for best science fiction movies, whether it's 50 or 150, it will be there somewhere. It's on everybody's list. And so we have a Criterion Collection account, so I found it.
That sounds cool.
Watched it. It's only 122 minutes. There's one scene in which it's all these people dancing in this spaceship, and they're all dressed up, and it's like, what is this about? It's so European. It is. I absolutely love the movie.
Is your next pick, MP, as obscure as that?
No, not at all. Mine's like totally mainstream because I thought we would go from, you know, sort of one end of the genre to the other. And so I sort of picked a group of films, Apollo 13, The Right Stuff.
Yes.
Because and even Hidden Figures. But they sort of give us a backstory about this program that was part of our lives growing up.
Absolutely.
The whole space program in NASA in the 50s and 60s, whether it was to counter other things that were happening in the world writ large. Not sure about that. But, you know, certainly The Right Stuff, spawns Top Gun. And I think the reason that The Right Stuff works for me is because Sam Shepard's performance as Chuck Yeager, you know, the test pilot who, is running Air Force testing in the desert, and all of the characters who, collect at this bar that we see again in Top Gun, or this type of bar. I just thought it was really... It's retro, but at the same time, again, 1983 movie. I don't know. It's just always resonated for me for some reason.
I love The Right Stuff. And directed by Philip Kaufman, who
Correct.
Also made not necessarily a space travel movie, but his remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers is one of the great sci-fi movies.
And what you talk about a cast. Ed Harris, Dennis Quaid.
Levon Helm.
Levon Helm, exactly. And who are some of the other astronauts? Scott Glenn. It's a terrific movie.
Fred Ward is in there.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
great.
He plays Gus Grissom.
Yeah. Well, and I think we've given people a lot of great rental options, but I think we've illustrated that this particular genre, you can kind of do anything. You can do comedy. You can do introspective, meditative studies on all kinds of things. So I'm going to check out that Czech movie as well.
Yeah,
that sounds really cool.
Yeah. And that was just a few of our favorite space travel movies. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbend and Mary Pat Truthart and I discussed Project Hail Mary. Let's take this moment to thank Aaron Bratt for directing the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late, great science fiction novelist Arthur C. Clarke. I'm sure the universe is full of intelligent life. It's just been too intelligent to come here. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.